Greetings, contrarian a-holes. Welcome to another episode of Objection, your worldwide leader in contrarian a-holery. I am joined in the old white man cabal bunker, I guess it is.
Yes.
by Judge David Johnson.
That's right. We're barely getting reception here, but...
So. Yes. And Chief Justice Mike Staley.
I am cataloging the rations as we speak.
That's good. Now, are you enjoying your scotch, Mike?
Oh, yes. Absolutely.
Scotch.
Cigars coming soon.
That's right, cigar. Oh, they'll be on their way. That's right.
Okay.
Yeah, there's cigars, scotch, Twinkies, and a lot of Dinty Moore stew.
delivered by the concubines.
Yes. So, Objection brought to you, as always, by DVD Verdict. And a generous grant from the old white man cabal. Just to recap the origin for anybody joining the show, you know, any newcomers to the show, and I know that our massive audience grows constantly, exponentially each week. This podcast began with a Facebook conversation about our shared love of Predator 2, and has since evolved into a show
Or devolved. I mean, it depends.
Yeah.
Is this podcast considered a step up from a Facebook discussion or a step down?
I think so. No.
Oh, you think step up? All right.
Mm-hmm.
All right. I feel good.
Yes. Yeah.
That's not the scotch talking, is it?
Not yet.
All right. Good.
We're definitely better than a tweet.
Yes. I would say that. Better than a tweet.
And it has, evolved or devolved, depending on how you look at it, into what? A show about action movies, really.
Really, it's
our love of them.
That's true.
And our defense of them against, I guess, highfalutin film critics who want to dismiss them on account of their machismo and general cavemanishness, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I think that's accurate. That's certainly the running theme. That's the running theme for us.
So speaking of cavemanishness, I did see the I guess it's not really a remake. Maybe it's
reboot,
part remake, part reboot, part just new movie, I guess. Conan the Barbarian, and I'm assuming I'm the only one here who's seen this.
I have not seen it.
I went the complete opposite direction and saw The Help.
Nice. Yeah. I believe my wife has read that book.
Yeah.
Isn't it based on a book? Yeah.
Yeah.
She said it was really good. So.
It was fantastic. The movie was fantastic. So.
Yeah, I do want to see that one. Yeah, I would think that Conan would be a little bit different than The Help. A little bit, they probably don't have a lot in common. Maybe not a good double feature. Maybe it would be a good double feature. But, I would give this remake a kind of qualified thumbs up.
Really? Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. It's not, it's definitely B-movie territory, but, and it has problems, largely at the beginning, where they just completely oversell how tough Conan is as a little kid. He's basically murderously insane, even at the age of 10. But after you get past that, and even in those parts, Ron Perlman, who plays his father, is pretty awesome throughout. As you would expect of Ron Perlman. But after that, I have to say, it's a much better... I will not say it's better than John Milius's Conan of the early 80s, just because that is... I love that movie, and I've seen it a million times. But Milius's movie is not really similar to Robert E. Howard's stories.
Is this one more similar to the stories?
Yeah, I mean, it's not directly based on any of his stories, and it does borrow some stuff from Milius' movie, too, in terms of his origin and stuff. But as far as tone and style, it's a lot closer to Howard's stuff. There's a lot more kind of magic involved in that sort of thing. And I got to say, Momoa is a good Conan.
How's the action?
The action, this this is where I think it really keys in. My dread going in was that this was going to be a nightmare of bad CGI.
Oh, yes.
And the CGI is very restrained. It's mainly used instead of matte paintings, which is, I think, where CGI really shines. And, I mean, you have some stuff, some, you know, gore effects and stuff that are augmented by CG. One in particular where involving a bad guy's nose that's pretty gruesome. A couple scenes. But otherwise, it's most of the combat is actors and stuntmen going at it.
Nice.
And going at it hard, and it's pretty brutal, and none of it looks like, you know, choreographed martial artsy stuff. I mean, when Conan fights, it's like brutal and nasty and, you know, pretty much no rules, no decency, you know, just going after dudes.
How about the boss fights? That was pretty good.
The boss fights are pretty solid. I was pleasantly surprised. I mean, the one kind of like heavy CG sequence in the trailers and stuff where there's a tentacled creature involved. I was pleasantly surprised that he's really not concerned with the creature that much in that scene. He's really fighting like guards and stuff, human beings in that, and the creature is more like an obstacle.
Sounds suspiciously like a little scene from the movie Willow.
Yes, yes. I'm sure that that's exactly where they lifted it from. The scene with the sand, the, you know, guys who are, I don't know, created out of sand magically. That was a good, good solid action scene where, you know, that was one where I thought, oh, this could be, you know, really bad. He's fighting CGI guys made out of sand. And really it was just, I mean, the CGI was there when they formed and when they broke up, you know, if they got hit with something, but pretty much any of the fighting was stuntmen in makeup. So, I mean, that was a good scene. Stephen Lang is a good villain. You know, choose scenery, no shoulder on fire, unfortunately, no Sanka. But he was, you know, he and Rose McGowan do a really good job of pretty much making you hate them within like 60 seconds of being on screen. And so, you know, by the end, when they get their expected comeuppance, it's, you know, it's good stuff. So not, you know, this is not Ironclad level. It's not 13 Assassins level of entertainment, but, as a B movie, you know, it was entertaining.
Nice.
I'm not sure there was a woman in the theater when I saw it. Pretty sure there was not. But
they're all with Michael watching The Help.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Nice.
So qualified thumbs up. Don't all right, good. Expecting, you know, expecting greatness. But
right. Which is kind of a bummer because it seems like that character in that world is kind of custom made for like a really effective little action movie, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And it zips along. It almost zips along too fast because it there's a lot of locations. You know, it does the little subtitle at the bottom of the screen every time it changes location.
And Morgan Freeman does the narration, right?
Yeah, yeah. Some of which is lifted directly out of Milius.
Yeah.
So it whips around quite a bit. It also, there are some scenes, there's at least one scene where they fight on a boat, which is cool to see Conan, because a lot of the original stories, he's, you know, on the high seas and stuff, and freebooting and pirating and stuff, so. And there's not a lot of that, but there is, you know, they do show him sailing around, and there is a big on-deck fight, so. Not bad.
All right.
Not bad, you know. No wheel of pain. Wheel of pain. No tree of woe. Unfortunately,
that's unfortunate.
But Stephen Lang is a little bit tougher than James Earl Jones was. I gotta say.
All right. Nice.
Yeah.
Michael, so, would you ever watch that? I mean, that
Conan?
That, yeah.
Would oh that, hell yeah.
Yeah. All right. Is that something? Were you fan? Where do you stand on the early 80s, you know, the 80s editions of Conan?
I thoroughly loved the first one, and I found some guilty pleasure out of the second.
Oh, it's okay. You can admit it. You're among friends here in the bunker.
Only because it showed up on cable all the time.
It did.
You know?
That's so true. It was omnipresent.
So my brother and I used to watch it quite a bit. But, no, I mean, you got to love the Arnold stuff. I mean, there's just a certain amount of cheese to it that you can't, and it still holds up. I mean, I know we gave Conan the Destroyer a terrible review, but hey, it is what it is.
Yeah.
I would say it is entertaining. You know, yeah. There's nothing worse than a boring, terrible movie, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, like, I could watch Conan the Destroyer. You know,
I did watch it the other day because it's on Netflix now.
Yeah.
Streaming. And the thing that I was surprised at and a little bit baffled at, too, is that I hadn't remembered this, but that Pat Roach doesn't just play the ape creature that Conan fights, but he plays the wizard, too, that turns into the... So it's like, well, why the wizard turns into an ape creature that's the same size as he is, you know. I mean, the He's wizard's already gigantic. Yeah. Why does he need to turn into an ape creature?
No, I will have to say Red Sonja is painful.
Red Sonja is painful.
Yeah.
And I used to, and that's something I remember, you know, thinking I liked when I was younger and then turned it on recently, just in time for, like, the part where she spanks the prince. And I'm like, this sucks.
God. Yeah. It's like going to the dentist, you know. It's just, it's an endurance test.
You're absolutely right. But I will, like, anytime, if the Conan the Destroyer is not, I will watch it, especially if it's the big, overblown battle scene where Conan fights the Muppet at the end there.
Yeah. It's such a weird, you know, because I had just bought the Blu-ray of the original and watched that, and so watching Destroyer was such a weird experience because Schwarzenegger is, he's leaner in it, but still really muscular, but he has a nice tan. Yeah. He looks very L.A.
He's just starting to embrace the lifestyle.
Destroyer, yeah.
That's right.
It's really weird. Because he's so rough around the edges in Conan the Barbarian.
Yeah.
Well, you know, before we get into our little topic here, I'll just throw out a quick capsule review for a movie I reviewed that just got sent to me, working on the review now, but Bangkok Knockout.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
This is another Magnet release and another action movie from Thailand. As far as a movie goes, it is incoherent and, like, just terrible. I mean, just acting, dialogue, terrible. Yeah. However, it is essentially the movie exists as a way to string together action sequences and stunt sequences that are just amazing.
That's what the trailer looked like.
That's what it is. So, like, it's the smallest of plots. And actually, I will thank them for not trying to layer on more plot than necessary. Just a group of, like, friends who are extreme athletes get drugged and they wake up and they find themselves part of a, it's a closed circuit broadcast and people are gambling on them as they try to survive attackers. And that's pretty much it. That's all you get. It takes, like, the setup, 10 minutes to set it up and then about just unending sequence of really amazing. I mean, I would say as far as a movie and a total failure, as far as a coherent narrative or anything, but wow, just it needs to be seen just for the sequences that are largely, I think there's a few stuff that was maybe wire assisted, but it's largely just, I mean, I think they just cast a bunch of stuntmen to do this crazy stuff because there's no one recognizable in it. So all these guys are just doing this stuff and it's just, it really is insane. They just come up with, sequences that are more and more dangerous for the people participating in them. I mean, I'm convinced of that. The last action scene is the good guy and the bad guy fighting underneath a moving tractor trailer.
Oh my god!
Nice, nice.
Yeah.
You bring up a good point because I really don't know whether it is worse when a Hong Kong movie has no plot or when it tries to have a plot.
If it delivers in the action, then has no plot is, it's almost preferable.
It's preferable, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you're not, one of our credos here, an objection is that a lot of the action sequences generally resonate more when, you know, you know what the stakes are and you're connected with the characters. We agree with that, right?
Right.
But there is another option, and that option is if you're watching guys literally put them, I mean, their suspense can be derived from the fact that these guys are doing some ridiculous things that are putting their own health at jeopardy, you know, and you watch the behind the scenes footage that's accompanied with it. They show you just like these dudes getting carted off in ambulances, you know.
Well, I mean, that's how Jackie Chan started his career.
Absolutely.
Right? Everything.
That's right. Exactly. So while you may not have any connection or resonance with, I mean, it really is just these guys running around in an abandoned building searching for this girl who got kidnapped, but you know, no one, you don't really care about that. But it's just when the sequence, you just this is
just the
coolness.
Fight. Just
yeah, the fight is raw. It's not, and these guys know how to shoot action. Not like, you know, the garbage that, you know, like, it's not like crappy quick edits and shaky cam and stuff. They just set their camera up wide angle and they just capture it all and they let the guys do it. And it really is something. So, there's been a couple that I've been disappointed with recently, but this, like, especially the Young Backs, which we, we dropped a deuce on before, but, really would recommend watching this just to see what they come up with for sure.
Now, is this indicative of the state of the Asian, I hate to say chop socket, because it's kind of gone beyond that, hasn't it?
Yeah, I would think so. I mean, it's weird because, you know, you're seeing a lot, like, out of the Hong Kong, you know, the Hong Kong or the Chinese filmmaking, I seem to be seeing a lot of period pieces.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, there's just, like, a lot of grand wars, you know, Chinese period pieces. So, like stuff like Hero, but even more so. I don't know, trying to think of some of the ones I reviewed recently.
All Donnie Yen stuff are kind of around the early part of the 20th century.
Yeah, it's really drifted.
When he could be justified in murdering Japanese with his bare fist.
See, that's the other thing.
Yeah, that's his whole thing. You know?
That's right.
He just wants to make movies about murdering Japanese.
It seems like China's just kind of, hey, let's make some movies where you smoke the Japanese. The stuff that Donnie Yen does, like that's set in the current times, is really great, you know. I kind of detached. I don't like the period stuff as much. But out of Thailand, when they get nitty gritty, that's when they really can really see some payoffs. Like Ong Bak went off the rails when it got really mystical and weird and plot heavy, and the plot sucked and it was obtuse. And you know,
it's not good when your action hero is a monk.
Yeah, that never pays off. So, yeah. So I had some up and downs, but this one really delivers as far as. Mutai Giant is something I had watched recently. Yeah. That's the other weird thing about imports. Like Mutai Giant, there's another one called like Power Kids or something. They're these lighthearted, almost family-like romps, but they're R-rated. So it's weird. There's like no place for them. I mean, hardcore action fans like myself don't really get anything out of them because they're goofy. You know, and then you're not going to show your 8-year-old these. So sometimes you get these weird ones. So, but this one really... really is something to behold. It's
fantastic.
It's pretty insane. But you're also seeing stuff like, I talked about Marin Tao, which is a movie I liked a lot. That's out of Indonesia. So basically, a lot of like the badass stuff where people doing their own stunts, that's still coming from overseas.
Well, we've seen a lot of clips out of India, too, and how they're starting to kind of just drive the idiot, the obscene, absurd factor, you know, through the roof.
It is. And when are they going to open? I don't understand why that pipeline hasn't opened yet.
I'm not sure. No distributor here has really dived into it. Everybody's kind of dipped their toe in the pool, you know, and grabbed a film here and there, but nobody's come over here and said, we're going to open up wholesale and dip into that catalog, which is so deep.
It does seem so deep. I mean, is Mondo Macabro still out there doing stuff?
You know what? We haven't gotten anything from them in a long time.
I know. We used to be pretty regular with them. So
I wonder if they've kind of tapped out.
Yeah. Interesting.
Interesting.
Yeah, but anyway, Bangkok Knockout. Just
no plot, great action. The other option you have if you're an Asian filmmaker is to make a plot that is so utterly mystifying to Westerners that we just throw up our arms and go, well, okay, you know, which is Ong Bak.
That's right.
You know, like fighting to get back a statue of an elephant. You know, that one you just have to go, well, okay, I guess. I don't really understand, but all right.
Yeah, I mean, like, at least that's what I would give Bangkok Knockout. It wasn't like presumptuous or anything. It didn't try to be anything. You know, it really was just, hey, this is simple and here's what happens. I mean, it was really the worst acting you'll see. Even when they're speaking Thai, I could tell it's terrible acting. So, but I mean, there's just some there's a cage fighting sequence where these guys are just jumping around the fencing of the cages and just throwing these crazy shots at each other and doing like these, like it's almost like it's a human video game almost, you know, it's kind of tongue in cheek too, because there's a character who's just like this tank-like guy with a mask who swings an axe around. He's impervious to all harm. And if you listen, you can hear some of the beats from the Friday the 13th theme.
Oh, jeez.
Toss that in there. So, and like, people aren't getting their skulls ripped out or anything. It's nothing like that. It's not like super bloody. But, you know, it's certainly violent enough people get wasted. But, so they have a little fun with it too. But it really, if you look at it, just a visual, like a stunt, you know, a stunt exhibition or something, it really is pretty amazing. It's amazing. Like, dudes are just falling like 20 feet, landing on concrete floors, you know, cut. And then you look at the behind the scene footage and they're, you know, being taped up and carted off and by the paramedics. Fantastic. So, but that's it. So I'll give a shout out for that. That's coming out on Tuesday, I think. Right, Michael? I think that's coming out.
I believe so.
Yeah. So check that out for sure. That'll probably be a Netflixer, I would think, because Magnet, Magnolia do that. So you can either check that or buy it. I would add that to your collection as well if you want my honest opinion. So,
want the insanity. Yeah.
Well, we burned through some time here.
We did. We burned through a lot. So, you know, I think our main topic will be, you know, fairly short here. But the idea for this show was going to be sort of either a video mixtape or, I guess, if Objection was going to put together a film festival.
That's
perhaps.
Not.
You know, something like that. So like double theme, features, double triple features, you know, quadruple features that are catered to the Objection audience and the old white man cabal, that the old white man cabal would approve of. So, you know, one we were that I tossed around on Facebook was the Sword, Sandals, and Testosterone Film Festival, which would include Excalibur, Milius's Conan, and Ironclad, which is one of our new favorites.
That's not bad.
You know? Yeah.
That's not bad.
You could probably throw 300 in there, too, if you wanted to.
That's true. 13th Warrior, maybe?
Yes, definitely. Definitely.
And you could serve, like, those giant ribs from the Flintstones. That's what you serve. Well, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And mead.
Just like a big leg of, you know, wildebeest.
That's right.
Mead, yeah. Have some live jousting in between.
Yeah. Well, I'll throw one out here. In honor of Gaddafi maybe getting waxed pretty soon, how about that? I'm going to say double feature of Back to the Future, because remember a key plot.
Libyans.
There were the Libyans, that's right. Yes. Libyans!
And every time you saw a white van driving down the street, you're like, the Libyans!
That's right.
It's a running joke in my family.
I like it, that's good. And then, so you watch that, you get the full feel of why they're so dangerous, and then you cap that off with Airwolf, the TV movie.
Ooh,
where Dom fantastic. And String get right up into Libya and blow up half the army with Airwolf. So,
very nice. And, you know, look for more Airwolf in a future episode.
That's true.
Of Objection.
All right, well, I'm going to, since you guys did with Mac, the comic book movies, kind of the best of the...
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm going to take the old white man cabal position in terms of the cheapest comic book movies.
Nice.
And do a triple feature of 1990s Captain America.
Have you seen these by any chance?
I have.
Oh, really?
Yes. In fact, because that Captain America wound up going direct to DVD.
Huh. I mean, that's legendarily terrible, right?
Oh, it's absolutely awful. And it stars Matt Salinger, who happens to be the son of Catcher in the Rye author J.D. Salinger.
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
Jeez.
Which, I mean, is bizarre enough right there. But Ronnie Cox from... RoboCop, the bad guy from RoboCop. Ned Beatty, Darren McGavin is in this. Oh. Yeah.
So Salinger, is he Captain America?
He's Captain America. We're in the big kind of muscle-padded rubber suit.
Yeah.
He looks like a frat boy. He was in Revenge of the Nerds, too. He's your typical-looking frat boy.
All right.
And it's been a long time since I've seen this. And they tried to be faithful to it, but it was kind of set modern day.
Gotcha.
So, they kind of touched on the war issues, the war being, you know, Vietnam or whatever. And the Red Skull's makeup was just absolutely terrible.
Was it just a regular face with red makeup on it?
No, it was one of those kind of...
A Skeletor mask?
Yeah, pretty much. Which looked nothing like, you know, what it did in the comic book. And you're like, how many iterations of this did you come up with before you decided that, hey, this looks great?
Yeah, right. What were the ones that were rejected? Those are the ones.
Yeah, right. Right. But, you know, in the current movie, it was Peggy, what's her name? I'm totally blanking. Peggy Carter. Carter. Yeah. Peggy Carter. And in the original movie, it's Sharon Carter, who Sharon is a member of S.H.I.E.L.D. now, and, you know, fights side by side with Steve in modern day. So it was kind of the focus on their relationship. So you kind of had that romantic sexual tension thing. And, you know, it was the Red Skull was trying to, I think it was like some dirty bomb or something, you know, remember, because that was the big thing, some kind of suitcase dirty bomb that would wipe everybody out. So that was kind of what the object of they were trying to prevent from happening.
I just Google image search the Red Skull from that, and he looks like a burn victim.
Yeah, he does, because there's like a giant scar or something down the middle of his forehead.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not at all skull-like.
Yeah. I think they were trying to kidnap the president or something, and, you know, just kind of one of those classic, like, pull everything from an 80s-type action film and throw it into one picture and shoot it in 11 days or something. So there was that. Well, go ahead.
And with Ronnie Cox and Ned Beatty, it's something of a Deliverance reunion.
This is true. I wonder if they got the squeal like a pig line in there. So, yeah, that was that. Then the second one would be the Fantastic Four,
about the same time. And I'm shocked that you saw that, because wasn't that like lost to the ether?
It was one of those things you could pick up on bootleg at a comic book convention.
Nice, yes.
Yeah. But that starred, you remember that, those cheesy like Disney movies like The Boy Who Could Fly and
stuff?
Oh,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, it was Jay Underwood who was the Human Torch in this.
Was he the Boy Who Could Fly?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the thing was like some big rubber suited, like some, you want to talk about a prop from an old Conan movie or something, that's kind of what it looked like. And I don't remember too much of the plot of this one. I just remember it being terrible, and that Roger Corman made this specifically so he wouldn't lose the rights to the franchise.
I remember reading about it, and again, I've never seen it, but I remember reading that there was a scene with a blind woman, and she puts on something, like glasses or something, and then the camera shifts to her perspective. So it's like you're looking at the perspective of a blind woman that can see all of a sudden. That's just what I remember, which is kind of characteristic with the cheapness of that movie.
Well, so. The other thing that sticks out in my head is when Mr. Fantastic's arms would stretch, they were like these rubber kind of, you know, it was like more like Stretch Armstrong.
Like Freddy Krueger in the Nightmare on Elm Street, right?
Right.
Walking down the alley.
Right. Right. I mean, the effects were just terrible. And you're right, it was good that they buried it because they needed to.
Nice.
Yeah.
Clarman.
And then the other one, which I actually somewhat enjoyed at the time, was Doctor Strange. They did a television, made-for-TV movie in 1978.
That. Yeah.
Which was actually fairly good. And faithful to the original story about the surgeon who gets in an accident and loses his ability to operate, and then goes on this kind of, you know, inner search for who he is and where he is, and, you know, where he is in the world, and become, you know, connects to this mystical force in Tibet. The Ancient One was played by Michael Ansara, who you guys may remember from Buck Rogers. He was, he was kind of the guy in the 80s had that very exotic looking face. He kind of took over for, what's his name from Black Christmas, who did all the, he did all the bad guy roles back in the 70s. He was in $6 Million Man. Why am I blanking on his name?
Yeah, I'm blanking on it too.
He was in $6 Million Man, or he was the $6 Million Man?
No, it wasn't Lee Majors.
Okay,
he was
John Saxon.
Yes,
John Saxon. Yeah, right.
John Saxon, who was kind of that, you know, omnipresent evil force.
That's right. He was a bad guy in Battle of a Thousand Stars or something. The Battle Beyond the Stars, right?
But the other interesting thing about this movie, and I didn't realize it at the time, but it co-starred Jessica Walter, who went on to be the mom on Arrested Development.
That's
so she was kind of the evil Morgan Le Fay. That one's really worth seeking out if you're a Doctor Strange fan, which I am. And they're still kicking around the idea of doing a big budget movie for Marvel after the Avengers thing is done, which Patrick Dempsey is bidding for. And I'd hate to see that happen, but whatever. We'll see what happens with that.
That's a pretty good lineup. I wonder what do you give away at that kind of film festival?
Yeah. That's a good question.
Whew, what kind of swag do you get for
blocks of cheese?
Lots of cheese.
The Marvel logo on it.
That's right. Your own expandable Mr. Fantastic arms, perhaps.
There you go.
Yes.
That'd be good. Nice. Like, well, did you have any more, Dan? Did you have any other ones? Because I only got one more to add to that. My last one was just, we've talked about this before, but I don't know if it's not enough to make up a festival, but a great double feature would be the terrible action movies starring stars of low-tier sports. As of course, yeah. Gymkhana and Psycho Kickboxer back-to-back.
Yes, that is a good one. You know, there's more in there. What didn't we come up with other ones? I mean, those are the prime ones, obviously. But it seems like we had more athlete ones when we were discussing that. But now I don't remember what they are. So write in to us. We're not going to give you an email address
or anything.
We don't want you to actually write in, but we'll just say write in.
Yes.
We're
to
fill dead space right here. I cannot remember what other ones we discussed. Yeah, one of the other ones that I had was the Los Angeles Gone Mad.
Oh, man. That'd be right up your alley, Mike. You probably witness all this stuff.
Yeah, every day.
Battle L.A., Predator 2,
Escape from L.A.
Yeah.
A Volcano.
Oh, yeah.
That was a good one. Yeah.
Anne Heche.
Earth Girls Are Easy. Volcano. Wasn't that like one of the more boring disaster movies? It was just kind of lava creeping around in L.A., right? It wasn't like...
Yeah, well, then they blew up the Beverly Center. That's apparently where the big fissure was. So
oh, okay.
On right. That side of town, and yeah, they blew that sucker up.
Volcano. There was another one at the same year about volcanoes, wasn't there?
Was that Dante's Peak with Pierce Brosnan?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So I always confuse the two. But Volcano's the one with Tommy Lee Jones, right?
Right. And Anne Heche before she went mentally insane.
Yes. Well, you know.
Maybe it was the movie that did it. You know?
That's true.
Working on that picture, pushed her over the edge.
So many possibilities. Well,
has that really been victimized in disaster movies a lot?
Well, Roland Emmerich pretty much blew us up in 2012.
Everyone got the business end of that.
Yeah.
No, I guess there was a central scene, right? A valley just kind of.
Well, the one where John Cusack was driving the limo to try and save everybody, and there was like 20 minutes of him escaping every possible death imaginable.
Yeah, that was even for Roland Emmerich, that was ridiculous.
Yes, it was. Absolutely. Although you're watching the scene of them driving, and you're like, oh, I know that place. Hey, there's my neighborhood. There I go, right?
I didn't survive, yeah.
Nope, didn't make it out in time.
Well, that was, we did an amazing job of killing time.
That's great.
Barely having any kind of... central theme to this episode.
I think we just barely made the cut to get some more grant money rolling in from the OWMC.
Yeah. I mean, I think they'll be pleased.
That's
keep
right.
The scotch flowing.
That's right. You have to keep the scotch flowing.
Single malt.
Scotch is delicious. the Dinty Moore, not so much, but, you know.
Now, I hope, Michael, you are getting some cut from the old White Man Cabal for hosting this podcast on DVD Verdict. They should be sending you, like, a couple hundred dollars in negotiable bearer bonds each month.
Yeah, there's a weird back-end deal that I'm not allowed to talk about.
Oh, nice. Yeah. All right.
Occasionally, they do pay in lost masters and stuff like that. You know, stolen art, things like that.
Stolen art. I think Michael's getting regular shipments of starts with a C, ends in an octobine. That's right.
There is that also.
That's a possibility.
Oh, boy.
I would like, getting paid in stolen art does seem like something they would do, for sure.
Right. You know, it's like, how am I supposed to pay the mortgage with this painting?
Staley's got a picture of the blue boy hanging up in his apartment.
Goes so well with the rest of the decor. Yeah.
Yeah, right next
the IKEA theme.
Yes, right next to his Captain Strange bust. Dr. Strange.
Oh, we'll see.
I get my doctors and captains all mixed up in the Marvel.
Yeah, it's easy to do.
well done. I think we did it. I think we hit the minimum amount of bandwidth to keep our funding in. So that's good.
Exactly. That's what it's all about, is the grant.
Yes.
That's it, you know. So, on that, we'll, I guess there's only one more thing to say.
Thanks. 10 points easy.